Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for the professor, you can start texting those into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line right now. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Hello, John.
Hello. How are you?
Good. So the Seahawks put Philip Dorsett on the injured reserve list, a guy we have yet to see. So you don't really miss him because you never had him. But he goes on there along with, obviously, Bruce Irvin, Marquise Blair are done. You got three roster spots there. So do they bring in some new faces? Might we see them sign somebody to help with this pass rush? What do you think happens?
Well, you have to start reaching around on the pass rush because that's right now becoming one of the thinnest areas. Wide receiver, I mean, they can promote either John Ursua from the practice squad or somebody else. So I think they're covered in that regard because, you know, they have a good feeling with David Moore being the third receiver. Who knows if Josh Gordon gets cleared and can be back, then there can be a roster spot for him. And then after that, it's like you know, it's not as if they have to get a linebacker because, you know, they had seven linebackers, including four that were battling for the starting jobs on the outside. So they don't have to do that, and they don't have to do anything at safety. And so it's kind of a luxury thing right now to see if there's anybody out there that they like and would like to bring in. You know, but what I started wondering about is that, okay, on the defensive end front, I mean, you know what they can do, obviously, is, you know, you take Alton Robinson and put him on the active roster. He's been inactive for the first 2 weeks. So they got one spot there. Rasheen Green will be healthy, is supposed to be healthy this week, so they have another one there. And now it's a matter of seeing what other guys that are on the street you might want to look at, bring in. But what I was wondering was that is this the time to maybe start going old school? Because remember a couple years ago, you know, when they had some needs, they brought in Dwight Freeney. I'm wondering if somebody like a Terrell Suggs, a Cameron Wake, you know, they're still, I'm sure they're looking at Clay Matthews, and if they can't get anything done there, but would they want to consider one of those guys if those guys still want to play?
Yeah, and then what about John Ursua? I don't know if you mentioned him, John.
I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, that
it was right after I mentioned the Drew Brees contract.
Oh, stop it, John. By the way, is Drew Brees done?
He's not looking too good.
Well, I thought, first of all, they got screwed on a lot of calls.
The as
calls,
they usually do.
It was ridiculous. But I'll say this. The Raiders looked really good. You look at that tight end. They were talking to him last night on the broadcast about maybe he's the fastest tight end. Jacobs looks really good. Abrams, the safety they got. I mean, all those draft choices are starting to really come around for them, it seems like.
Oh, yeah, it really did. And, yeah, they got a slow start in the first quarter. But I guess the biggest thing for them was getting the real good play out of Derek Carr for three quarters. Because after the slow start in the first quarter where they fell behind 10-0 and he didn't look too good, I mean, he was really starting to get hot. And going against the defense that, you know, has now been beat up now the last couple weeks. And that surprised me because, you know, you look at the 24 points they gave away last week against Tampa Bay and then what they gave up last night. And that's surprising me because all of a sudden a very good Saint team that I thought was the best team in the NFC did not look like the best team in the NFC.
Well, and how about Derek Carr, man? I mean, Bob and I were talking about this before we came on the air. He was an MVP candidate, was that 2 years ago for like
about
7-8 weeks?
And
you know, you look at his completion percentage. He's just kind of a weird one because it's like I feel like he doesn't get the respect, even maybe from Gruden, and I know he's hard on quarterbacks, but also just around the league. And all of a sudden you watch him play and go, yeah, this guy's pretty dang good.
Yeah, no question. And so, and I guess what it comes down to, the two of them, Gruden and Carr, were not on the same page. I mean, for two different things. One, I know that John wants him to throw the ball more downfield, and he's more of a check down guy, you know, one that rather take a little bit of the shorter, safer stuff, try to save from interceptions. And then the other thing is that Derek Carr does not like any kind of swearing.
Doesn't want him to use the F word.
Any other word. I mean, the S word or F word.
Come on, John. He had to have heard that since he strapped on a helmet in junior high school, college.
He doesn't like it. And,
well, but where has he been where it didn't exist, I guess would be my question.
Well, it's not like he's naive. I mean, remember, his brother played in the NFL, and with the expansion Houston Texans and all that stuff. But he is a religious guy that doesn't like swearing around him. And you can tell that there's been some odds right now with John Gruden, who is going to, you know, bust a swear word as often as he possibly can. You know, both he and Sean McVay are like that. And, you know, now it's like it's one that, you know, because, again, what I think John Gruden thinks, like, well, you don't like the swear words, you must not be tough.
Yeah,
and that's kind of crazy, but that's what it is.
I wonder if it's this too, because I heard a Major League Baseball umpire say, he's like, you can say whatever bleep you want, but don't say you. Don't follow it with you. And I wonder if it might be that, because Gruden's sort of been known to do that sometimes. And it's like, okay, yes, I've heard this word before, but please don't, you know, direct it right at me. I wonder if that might be part
could
of
be,
it.
Could be. I mean, it's kind of a weird one, but that's the way it is with John Gruden and Derek Carr. But right now, they're on the same page. They're 2-0. And now, you know, you start to think, with Denver being 0-2, with all the injuries that they have, the Chargers kind of just trying to feel their way, for at least temporarily, with a rookie quarterback. Could this be a Raider team that could sneak in and maybe get a wild card?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. They play at New England this week, John. What about flipping over to the other conference, so the NFC? Are the Seahawks the best team in that conference?
Well, in my opinion, I had to send my AP vote in today, and I voted them as the third seed in the conference, in the league, you know, behind Kansas City and Baltimore, and put them above Green Bay as the top seed in the NFC, and also the New Orleans Saints, put them over the New Orleans Saints, because the Saints had to drop down. So, and it's funny because, I mean, you still see some teams putting San Francisco over Seattle, and that's a distant thought right now because of all the injuries for San Francisco. Some put Green Bay over, and you can make an argument for that because they're off to a very good start. But I'd put Seattle number one. And again, what you look at is you say, oh boy, how can you be number one and in the conference and give up that many points? Well, let me think here. You know, how many points did Green Bay give up? They gave up 21 on Sunday in a 42-21 win, and then they gave up 34 points in the opener. It's like, you know, understand right now, it's a passing league. It's a scoring league. I mean, there is 50.3 points in a game right now, so that's 25.15 per game as far as what teams are getting. That's about a point above. Maybe actually it was about 3 points above last year at the start of the season. The rushing yards are at a very high level, passing yards. And so it's right now offense has the edge in the National Football League.
John, what's going on with these fines being handed out to coaches for not wearing the masks? Dave and I were talking about this during the break, and it seems odd that none of the players are being forced to wear masks. They're in close contact with each other, obviously, and the coaches are all part of that same bubble. They're all being tested at the same rate. So why are they being held to a different standard?
I don't know. It's like maybe what the league is thinking is like the coaches should be the example of how important it is in our country to wear a mask. And so, I can understand the assistant coaches wearing masks because they're not going to be talking as much as Pete Carroll's going to be talking or a head coach is going to be talking. I just think they overdid it. I think they're, you know, because this to me is a little too much. And, you know, I don't think it was certainly to be fined $100,000 for not wearing a mask. And, of course, I mean, Pete, you know, you see Pete in practice. I mean, he's always wearing a mask. Now, in games, there's so much communication that has to go on because you have to, you know, communicate with the players. You have to communicate with the assistant coaches. You have to communicate with the officials who you want to, you know, cuss down and you'll get them to get the calls right. And so, you know, I think this is an overdue. And $100,000, $350,000, $100,000 for the coach and $250,000 for the team. I think that's ridiculous. And again, if it happens again next week, there's the thought the price is going to go up.
Boy, and it's just so hard to communicate without it. I have a really hard time just myself, you know, with when somebody has a mask on. But, you know, it's one thing. But you know what? You make the sacrifice, right? And like Tomlin was saying, you know, he said, hey, look, man, I'm just happy to be working and the NFL going and everything, so I'm going to try to do my part. And that's, I get that, absolutely. But, man, it's just so weird that they're all being tested. I guess it's just a look thing, right?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's PR. It's right. You know, you want to give an example to the country, but it's like, because let's put it this way. I have not seen one player wear a mask, and they're all around each other, and everybody is tested now still every day.
Yeah. Hey, John, J.J. Watt had some pretty harsh words for his rookie teammate, Blacklock. And I didn't see exactly what he did, but it cost him at the end of the game. And that's not something you usually see come out in the media, especially that he called him out. I guess because he's a rookie, it's okay.
Yeah, so of course, J.J.'s not going to hold back words. I mean, he's one of the great gentlemen in the game. He's one of the great players in the game. But, you can see he's feeling the pressure because, my guess would be Blaylock he didn't play well because, you can see they can't stop the run. They're giving up over 140 rushing yards a game. And the fear that I had for this team is now starting to be realized is that, okay, they got so much money tied up on offense, because they've got, $263 million in total average salaries that combine. But, I mean, you got like eight guys on offense making big money, and it was taking away from the defense, and now they can't stop anybody on the ground. They're struggling in the pass, and I know that they won against Kansas City and Baltimore, and so maybe it's unfair to say that those are the two best teams in the AFC, but they weren't competitive against them. They lost two double-digit games, and so now they're in big trouble, and a good chance they can lose this week. I mean, they're 0-2, and all of a sudden in a bad spot because they're over the cap next year.
John, the Rams and Cardinals are both 2-0. Which team's better?
It's hard for me to still say this, but I have to give it to the Rams.
Yes, I'm with you, John.
Yeah, because again, it's like, okay, I thought all along that Arizona was going to be the most improved team in the NFC, and they're proving that. And, certainly they get, I think, better play at quarterback than what you see with the Rams because, Kyler Murray is great and getting greater and greater and greater. But what surprises me, and again, Arizona's defense is better than expected. They're doing well. But the Rams defense, we're talking about this morning. I mean, other than Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and Michael Brockers, name me other starters. Now, of course, I didn't bring up Vic Rapp because you know him from the University of Washington, but you can't name any of the other starters because they're all new and they're not accomplished, but they're playing well.
Hey, John, let me ask you about two players we've got multiple texts on, so I'll just combine them all into one and say it's from the 206. What is the latest with Josh Gordon, and is Earl Thomas a guy that's got some appeal to the Seahawks being the, considering the injury situation?
Nothing new on Josh. He's still a big mystery because the league's not saying anything about it. I thought today, being a day for transactions and that they would say something, but they're not saying anything. So probably it's not a good sign. And the answer is no on Earl Thomas. I mean, they don't need an extra safety at this stage, because that's the benefit of what was there is that, okay, you had Marquise Blair playing in the nickel and doing a very good job at that, but they still have Ugo Amadi, and they still have the option of taking Quentin Dunbar and putting him in the slot and putting Trey Flowers out there. And so, they can seem to be okay with Lano Hill. They still have the option of maybe having Ugo Amadi as a safety. So, my read on this is that, maybe they'll just take somebody from either the practice squad. It's not like there's, a need because they had so much excess to a point where, I mean, you get Flowers on the field. He gets maybe 9 to 12 plays a game. There was still a struggle to see if you can get Amadi and Blair on the field when Blair was healthy. So, no, I think that they're in good shape. I mean, they're deep at safety, and they're good at safety, and they're good in the secondary.
All right, John, I was less than pleased and sent Bob and Maura. I don't know why I left Jim off. I should have had him on the text thread, but I was really angry at the block on the defenseless defensive player last night by the receiver. I mean, he did everything that he possibly could to kind of screen him and not hit him like Tyler Lockett did. That was so vicious, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
But and then, there was a horse collar thing where he let go and tackled him, and they still called it, and there was a the guy's hand comes down and hits the helmet. My question is, that's pretty typical, though. Doesn't it start out that way every year where they kind of overemphasize safety rules, things like that, in the first couple of weeks? I guess I'm asking, can we expect it to calm down a little bit?
Well, I mean, it has calmed down. I mean, certainly there was a lot last night, but, so far the penalties are at a record low pace. I mean, I think in the first 2 weeks of the season, there's only been 176 penalties. I mean, roughly, it was 11 penalties a game in the first week and 12 this week. And so this I think, is the lowest in like 15 to 20 years. and lower significantly. It's down like, I believe, 26%. And so, no, the officials are pretty much not doing what they normally do, is overcall. Now, of course, you know, in the preseason, you know, they always call more than you would ever imagine, but there was no preseason. But they've gone into the season not blowing the whistle much, not throwing the flags as much. Again, we're on a record pace right now with the fewest number of penalties. Well, let's hope that doesn't change. Let's hope they continue doing that. But, you know, on plays that seem to be obvious. In fact, that's what they did come back and say. You know, it has to be obvious. And, you know, if it's a helmet hit, you're going to get a flag. If it's one on that new rule that you have as far as defenseless receivers and even defenseless returners and all that stuff, you know, it's going to, they're going to err on the side of caution and they're going to throw the flag. Safety's a big issue.
John, what's the latest with the Cowboys injury report?
It's not good. I mean, they still don't know about Tyron Smith, their left tackle. He's got a neck injury. They don't know if he's going to be able to go this week. You know, they had to put starting cornerback Anthony Brown on the injured reserve list because he suffered an injury last week in practice. They since the start of the season, they've had to put six guys, I believe, on the injured reserve list. But, you know, Lowell Collins is out there. He's on the injured list. You know, Dexter Lawrence, they have some questions about him this week. So probably next to San Francisco, I'd say Dallas, maybe the Jets are the next two teams as far as the most injuries.
John, you know there's just not a lot to choose from when you sign Blake Bortles to be a backup. And that's what the Broncos have done.
That's what it's come down to, yeah.
Poor John Elway. You know, and they finally got somebody they thought might be okay. He just can't get a quarterback there.
Yeah, he's going to be out, what, like
three to five weeks?
3 to 5 weeks,
Damage in the rotator. It's not a Tommy John or anything like that, but it's a banged up one. And so they say 3 to 5 weeks on that, you know, and they still have Jeff Driscoll there for whatever reason. He's right now the backup, and Blake Bortles, but that's how bad it's gotten. It's like, you know,
well, Driscoll's the starter now though. Isn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. So Blake goes in there as the potential backup, but you know, this season could slip away because they were competitive in the first two games, but you think about what's happened to them. First, they lose Von Miller. He's out for the season. Then you come back and you lose your quarterback. Cortland Sutton goes down. They had an injury all training camp with Todd Davis, a starting inside linebacker. He's cut. And in fact, I think he just signed with the Minnesota Vikings. So, yeah, they're mounting a lot of injuries and a lot of problems.
My turn. Sorry, John. Bruce Arians. You know, it was kind of funny how the exchange afterwards, he was talking about, you know, Brady, and then Brady was saying, hey, he's a coach, I can take it, I'm a big boy, everything. He has, what's your read on Bruce Arians? He's one of those guys that, I don't know, he kind of rankles certain people, sometimes me, but, you know, for the most part, he seems to be a pretty good head coach, and he just recently said he wasn't surprised by Gronkowski's lack of production.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing because, you know, they went to a pure two tight end set and they have three tight ends. You know, Cameron Brait is a real good pass catching tight end. Gronk is a complete tight end. O.J. Howard's a first round pick. And so they go to the two tight end set and they're not throwing in the ball. But, you know, in a lot of ways, you can understand it to a certain degree because they do want to run the football. And it looks like Leonard Fournette may end up being the starter there in a week or so. I know Aaron Jones currently is the starter, but Fournette finished the game strong and, you know, is, I think, gaining respect in the eyes of Bruce Arians. But I think you saw a little bit of that, the same thing in the Seattle game. I haven't got the total numbers of two tight end sets yet, but, you know, it was up 30% in the first game from last year. Because it was 11% last year for the Seahawks, and in the first game it was like 31%. But what you're looking at is how many catches to the tight ends, and that was one to Will Disley and one to Greg Olsen. But the reason for that is that they got five catches to DK Metcalf and seven for Tyler Lockett. And so, you know, if you're only throwing 28 passes like they did on Sunday, that limits who gets the ball. And, of course, you know, they got the three and like to get five over to Chris Carson. So at the moment, you know, the duo, and that's why I say it's the same thing as Tampa Bay to a certain degree, because if Chris Godwin and Michael Evans are the best two receiver tandem in football, and this is becoming one in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, that could limit the number of catches for two tight end sets, but not and catches, but not the number of sets, because I think they like the idea. You're more unpredictable in two tight ends than you are in three receiver sets.
Professor, we had a healthy debate over this one in the opening segment. The third and one call where Russell overthrew Tyler Lockett toward the end of the game. Dave liked the call. I thought the Seahawks should have run the ball. You are the arbitrator, John. Which way do you go on that one?
I go with Jim on this one.
Can I make my case, though?
No, you already did. You did it an hour ago, right?
Not
John,
to you, he didn't.
Oh, okay. But
John, you're putting the ball. Who's the best player on the Seahawks team?
Russell Wilson.
By far. Okay, so you put the ball in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Okay, but his hands can also throw a 5-yard pass and get the first down, can it?
Those routes were covered, though.
Oh, okay.
Well, otherwise he probably would have thrown that. Well, I just think everybody's, you know, kind of overreacting one way or another, and I feel like be consistent. Not you, John. I'm talking about the texters into the Vizzy Hard Seltzer line and... You know, am I getting that right?
Well, no.
Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Yeah.
Vizzy Hard Seltzer
Vizzy
text
Hard
line.
Vizzy Hard Seltzer line. Thank you, John.
Yeah, but to your point, and I think it is valid, there is an overreaction because there was criticism, and again, this is in the same vein. There was criticism a week ago that Pete Carroll didn't go for the fourth down and decided to punt. And it's like, oh, you should go for the first down. And then, of course, now here's Russell Wilson, going for the killer play
right.
with the pass downfield. And now that's criticism there. It's like, you're right. You got it. There's got to be more consistency.
Yeah.
You know, I'm of the vein that, don't go higher percentage in a time right now because, you know, that incompletion and the fact that they didn't get the first down put them in a position where here you have Cam Newton driving back and being 1 yard away from making you lose the game.
Well, here's what I've noticed over the years. The fans and the texters to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer hotline.
Text line.
they like plays that work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, they're not a big fan of it.
Yeah, that's and the criticism comes in.
Yeah. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Jim.
The professor sides with me. The end.
Jeez.
Yeah, well, he wasn't on your side last week about.
Well, I wasn't.
Minshew or something like that. Would you want him to be an MVP or something? I don't know.
No, it wasn't Minshew because I actually praised Minshew yesterday for his 2 weeks. But again, it's Jacksonville beating Indianapolis. I never thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, and I think Jim's gotten a big head over it, John. So just next time when you say congratulations, John, maybe just put a lid on that for now.
Well, remember, I mean, we'll be hearing about the cold hard. Facts coming, not the cold hard facts, but the lock of the week coming up here at the end of the week.
Stone cold lock of the week.
I'll be able to beat him up on that.
Thursday night football, Professor Gardner Minshew in the spotlight.
All right.
This is going to be a classic. I mean, two teams that might be battling for the first pick in the draft.
John, we appreciate it. Well, I guess we won't talk tomorrow. We got Mariner baseball tomorrow, so we will talk on Thursday.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, it's El Hombre. Short edition because we've got to turn things over to the Mariner pregame show at 5 o'clock, but we'll ask him if he thinks the Seahawks are the best team in the NFC and find out what's going on with his Eagles. All of that coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
The professor sides with me. The end.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee Wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
Well, typically this will happen at 5 o'clock on Tuesdays, but at 5 o'clock we turn you over to the Mariners pregame show, so we're efforting El Hombre right now. We'll connect with him here momentarily. And he'll complain about the length of this segment being cut down.
Right. This is a Clint Eastwood movie?
Yeah,
this
I think it's
is
the good, the bad, the ugly, I think.
And ugly. Yeah.
Somebody can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what it's from.
Is that the movie where he says, do you feel lucky, punk?
I think that's a Dirty Harry
movie.
That's
Dirty Harry.
Yeah. Jim would know. Jim's the movie
savant. What do you think we're better, Clint Eastwood back in the Westerns or as Dirty Harry?
Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah, it is pretty close. Well, let's ask this guy, the one, the only El Hombre himself, Michael Bradley. What's going on, man?
How you doing?
How are you doing? What are you on, a speakerphone? What's happening there?
I'm on my Bluetooth and my cell phone. I've got things going on here. Nobody told me it was 7:30 tonight, by the way. So I'm discombobulated.
Oh, okay. That message. Yeah, we got a Mariners pregame show coming up at 5. So
you got to be ready for that.
That's exactly right, buddy. Hey, so tell us, in your own unbiased, objective opinion, who's the best team in the NFC?
The best team in the NFC is the Seattle Seahawks.
Atta baby.
Like it.
Gotta be. And Russell Wilson is on fire. I mean, the Packers are good. The Rams looked good on Sunday, but they were playing the Eagles. So that doesn't really count. So I'll tell you, those Seahawks looked great.
Yeah, what do you think about Russell Wilson? And they're, turning him loose, and there's lots of talk about that. But as far as an MVP goes, I was saying this the other day, Michael. He has a lot of those throws, a lot of them that everybody just raves over, whether it's Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. But he has made some ridiculously hard throws, and, he's got a lot of heat on his fastball. I don't know. I mean, to me, I feel like now that he's starting to get the respect, maybe an MVP, but I'm not sure if you're getting that feeling back there in Philly.
Well, look, here's the thing. Back here in Philadelphia, we are so upset about what's going on with the Eagles that the Seahawks could be 22-0 and no one would be noticing. Right? So trying to get the East Coast right now with the Giants, Saquon Barkley, he's done. The Jets, they're a catastrophe. The Eagles, horrible. The Washington NFL franchise could be relegated, but they beat the Eagles. New England just lost to Seattle. I mean, all East Coast is just basically in an uproar right now about football. So to say, what's East Coast think about Russell Wilson? It doesn't. And I'm not saying anything against Russell Wilson. What I'm saying is they got their own problems. Watch him play. And you mentioned the heat on the fastball. I marvel at a guy who's 6 feet tall or listed at 6 feet tall, can throw the ball so hard, so effortlessly like he does. Elway, when he threw the ball, it was like a sneeze. It was a very violent motion. Wilson just goes back, flings it, and that thing comes out like a heat-seeking missile.
Hey, Michael, I got a kick out of it. I know you're not enjoying what's going on with Carson Wentz and the Eagles, but the piped-in sound this last Sunday, the guy that was controlling the audio actually put some boos in there when Wentz overthrew a couple of guys.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. There's no way those boos were even within 100 decibels of what they would have been. I'm not sure whether he's hearing them in the stadium or whether they're just being put in over the broadcast so the fans can hear them. So if it were an employee of the Eagles sitting there saying, oh, that was a crappy throw, boo, he's going to have somebody in authority showing up in front of him saying, no, dude, knock that off. So I think that was put in by the Fox people. And I've been in Philadelphia, plenty of Philadelphia sports settings when the fans boo. And that was almost polite. That was almost being nice to him, that sound. It would have been cacophonous.
I was going to say, I haven't been back there the last a couple of times the last year, and they're going back there this year. It would be appropriate to what you would normally hear there, though. I mean, as you said, I mean,
you would hear the boos, but yeah. You wouldn't hear them so low. I mean, they would be resounding. It would be
thundering.
I mean, the way he's been playing, he stinks right now. I'm not saying he's an awful quarterback, but here's the one thing that people around here aren't mentioning all that often, and I think this is the key. Frank Reich was his offensive coordinator the year they went to the Super Bowl, and that was the year he had his best year before he tore his knee up against the Rams. Kevin Stefanski was the quarterback coach. He's now the head coach of the Vikings, I believe. The Vikings or who? Who's Stefanski coaching?
Cleveland, Browns.
Cleveland. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought it was an NFL team. So it was Stefanski and Reich, two future head coaches who were coaching him. They're not there.
Yeah.
Doug Peterson doesn't have an offensive coordinator. He's doing it himself. So I don't think Wentz is being coached enough and properly and hard enough so that he understands this is the way you do it. This isn't a freelance thing. Remember where he played. He went to high school in North Dakota. He played at North Dakota State. Most of the time, when he came out in five wide, the fourth and fifth guys covering his receivers were either Cowboys or were like Bison. So he had no problem finding the open guy.
Hey, you brought up Barkley's injury. I mean, that was one of many. The Seahawks lost Bruce Irvin and Marquise Blair to ACL tears. You saw it with Bosa. You saw it with – I mean, it was just up and down. I've never seen a day like that in the NFL. And a lot of people are pointing to the fact that there was no preseason. Now, it feels harder to buy as the season goes on. You've got a couple games under your belt. You had practice and everything. But do you put it on that, or is it just bad luck? Or how do you sort of explain just the massive number of injuries that took place?
I don't put torn ACLs on preseason. What it may be is that these guys weren't able to work out enough moving into the season, so that the rest of their body, I mean, you can't train an ACL, right? An ACL is a ligament. It bears the brunt. One of the reasons why women are more prone to, by percentages, to ACL tears than men are is that their hips are wider because they're made to bear children. Therefore, it puts extra stress on the ligament. If these guys weren't able to train in the facilities and train the rest of their body so that the musculature around their knees is sufficient, maybe that could do that. These guys don't play a lot of preseason football. I mean, if you get a quarter out of the starters during these preseason games, that's a lot. And while it's full speed because no one wants to get hurt, it's not really game speed where it really matters. So I'm not buying the preseason games. I'm buying perhaps the training and the working out and the practices leading up to it. That's possible.
Hey, Michael, really quick, because we gotta go, unfortunately. But what do you make of the coaches getting fined for not wearing masks? I mean, they're being tested every day, and you know they're around the players. Do you think that's going to go away?
No, they're going to get fined more than they should be, and here's why: it's optics. Okay, yeah. Somebody said it on Twitter. If everybody tests negative in the bubble, et cetera, it shouldn't be a problem. But the referees aren't going to be tested the way the players are. You've got people from the TV crews on the sidelines. You've got all sorts of people in there who aren't with the teams all the time. Plus, you've got Sean Payton putting out a Twitter thing saying, wear a mask, with him wearing a mask, and then he doesn't wear a mask. The NFL's trying to convince everybody that this is going to be done safely, properly, and we're going to make it through the season because it wants the TV money, it wants the gambling interest, it wants the fantasy interest, it wants people to buy stuff, and here comes a bunch of coaches out not wearing the masks. Put them on. I teach two classes a day, every day, with a mask on. Don't tell me that you can't call plays with a mask on. That's the lamest thing I ever heard. Gruden said that. It's ridiculous.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley. You can follow him on Twitter, @DailyHombre. @DailyHombre is where you're going to find him on Twitter. Michael, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
So long, suckers.
El Hombre is brought to you by LoanEstimateReview.com.
Airball.
Huh?
Well, it had to be an airball because he was on his cell phone.
Yeah, it was hard to hear. The close started there for him, but either way.
They should have piped in.
I know.
Phone clang.
All right. Coming up, has the offensive line play for the Seahawks surprised you so far? We're going to hear what Pete Carroll had to say about it, give you our thoughts. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app, which is powered by Dubin Law Group. It's free, by the way. It is free. You can download it. You can text from it. You can watch this video stream right now. Dave Wyman in studio. You could see him. You could see his artwork on the giant head of Danny O'Neill here sitting in between us. So a lot of cool things you can experience on the app, and you can do it for free. We got the Mariner game coming up at the top of the hour, but before that, we'll get into this offensive line play. And we talked about it before that, you know, generally I'm the one that's going to complain about, you know, what they're not doing well and what's going wrong with the line. I don't think they're perfect by any stretch. I don't know which line is, but, man, I'd have to say if I'm giving them a grade through two games, B+.
Yeah.
A-. Again, not perfect. Some penalties. Russ took some hits on those touchdown throws. I just tweeted out there was like a compilation of the three touchdown passes, and he got hit on each one of them as he let the ball go. He took a pretty good knock. Somebody put those together on Twitter. That's @BobStelton on Twitter if you want to see them. But overall, I don't have a ton to complain about with this line, and Pete Carroll feels like the pass protection has been really, really good.
Against a really, really difficult defense to deal with, that they've historically been really a problem. Russ had a terrific night again, and the pass protection was excellent for us all night long, handling all the stunts and the pressures and the different things that they do, the variety of things they do. So a really big night for us to handle those kinds of problems. And you know, Russ threw 5 touchdown passes tonight. It was just you can just see that he's really in command of what we're doing, and his receivers came through beautifully.
Boy, considering the turnover, man, I'm not sure how much more you could expect.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of things out of the rookie that got better. You know, they're more coordinated, picking up the pass. The thing that upset me the most is when Yapati got tossed into the back of Dwayne Brown's legs. Just like, man, you're
a lot of human.
Dude, how did you get twisted like that? And it just kind of, you know, kind of speaks to how ridiculously strong some of these players are in the NFL. But, you know, one of those hits was a little bit on Carson. Because when he threw the touchdown to DK Metcalf, he actually signaled Carson in because he was spread out wide, and he came in to take care of Chase Winovich. Mm-hmm. And he blocked him for a second and then let go and was going to be like a safety valve for him. So that's why Winovich got there. He could have blocked him a little longer, I guess. So even that one was, you know, maybe on Carson. And sometimes they're on that. But, I mean, for the most part, yeah, it's been pretty good. Look, they've been giving him enough time to be spectacular, and he has. And some of, you know, his spectacular plays are when he uses his feet, and that's because he's avoiding pressure, but he's good at it, and he's able to do that. He's not the only one, man. I just saw there's something on Twitter. It's like, how come Sam Darnold's not getting credit for this throw? But he has a ridiculous throw where he's avoiding pressure, and he's running to his left and throws like a 40-yard bomb to his right for a touchdown. I mean, it's not like that's uncommon. I mean, you know, look, that's just playing in the NFL. And, you know, even quarterback like Cam Newton, they moved him around a little bit. They didn't get to him, but they moved him around a little bit. So, you know, that's nothing to be alarmed about. And then they ran for 154 yards, Jim. I was like, wow. You know, and maybe you're right. Maybe they should have run on that 3rd and 1.5, I think it was, more than 3rd and 1. But hey,
that changes the whole thing then.
Yeah, it was 1.5. But no, I mean, it was good to get that going, because we talked about that before going into the Patriot game, that, hey, we don't really know if they have a run game, and they kind of proved that we do.
Yeah, you just assume that they'd be able to run the ball just based on Pete Carroll and his history and having Carson and Hyde back there. But, yeah, you really didn't know until you saw it. And you're right, Dave. I mean, they looked good the other night, rushing for 154 yards. The other part of it is they've only given up 5 sacks. Now, it's just 2 games, but I can figure this out, Bob. It's a pace for 40, and I like that, 40. And if you could get 40 sacks, you know, from your defense, now they're below that pace. But still, if Russell Wilson gets sacked 40 times this year, you'll take that over the last 2 years, because I think it was 48 or 50 the last 2 years. So that's an upgrade there. And I didn't think it would come together this quickly. I thought that that would be the weakest position group on the team. It hasn't been the case so far. But these guys, they got 3 new starters, center, right guard, right tackle. And I'm looking at footballoutsiders.com right now, and they rank the offensive lines. The Seattle Seahawks are number 12 in the league, according to Football Outsiders, through 2 games. So, yeah, definite improvement there.
One more from Pete, just talking about Brandon Schell, Damian Lewis, and Posick, said they are all doing really well.
Well, the guys are doing really well. Honestly, they're doing well. Brandon Schell's a good player, and he's holding up. He's been really consistent so far. Damian is doing a fine job, too. He's a really good athlete for the position, even though there's newness there. He's got great feel for it, and he's really tough and really strong and all that. And Posick is playing well, and so Ethan has given us a transition that was better than you might have thought, you know, with the new guy coming, just because he's been a student of the game since he's been here, and he really helps in that regard. And you know, maybe there's a little LSU thing going on here with center and the guard. I don't know, but they're communicating really well.
A little LSU communication going on between him and Lewis. Whatever it is, keep it rolling, because, again, 3 new additions to this line. You had to be a little suspect at best, worried at worst, when all you hear is to the contrary of that, that you've got to have the same 5. And the more you've got that, the better off you are and the better they work together, which I'm sure is still true. But the fact that they've been able to look this good, in my opinion, in two games is credit to them, credit to Coach Solari. It's been fantastic.
Well, and maybe, you know, Winovich and that whole group, Dietrich and Wise, you know, maybe they're not the greatest, you know, D-line to face. They're more about DBs in New England, but they did face two really good D-linemen in Atlanta. So with, you know, Grady Jarrett especially. Mm-hmm. So, hey, Jim, by the way, why are you reading a place, and why are they trying to? Why are they calling their internet site the Football Outsiders? Shouldn't you be going to the Football Insiders to get your information and stats?
I googled something offensive line rankings 2020 NFL team, and it took me to Football Outsiders, and I just assumed that those people know what they're talking about.
By the way, Mora pointing out that Winovich had 5.5 sacks as a rookie last year.
Of course, Mora would know that.
Well, of course she would. She's in the know. She knows.
He had a lot of quarterback hits the other night. He got so close to Russell Wilson, and he must have been so frustrated because usually when he got there a little late, Russell completed passes the other way.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they can keep that going. Meanwhile, we're going to turn you over to the Mariners pregame show. You got L.J. Newsome on the mound for the Mariners. First pitch is at 6:10. Our thanks to John Clayton, Lano Hill, and Michael Bradley. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, scroll down to our picture, and click on that. And everything you miss each and every day is right there for you. So it's really, really convenient. Another thing you can do on that phone app. So take advantage of that. No show tomorrow. We got a Mariners game happening at 3:40 tomorrow. So you won't have us, but never fear. We're going to be back on Thursday right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.